I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in.
When you have an oral issue, it is connected to the rest of the body. I think oral microbiome measurements are going to be exciting, because at the moment we're testing gut microbiome and fecal samples. Like, surely it's far more effective to be doing saliva samples and checking what's here. And there's a good amount of research that shows that what happens with certain disease, present with periodontal disease and so forth, it reflects into the rest of the mouth. So can we get a really sharp diagnostic tool to present risk factors for pre-diabetes, for thyroid issues? I think all of those things are waiting there in the mouth.
Dr. Stephen Lin is a board-certified, accredited dentist, speaker, and author. Frustrated by the dental profession's limited approach to applying without addressing the cause of disease, Dr. Lin merged anthropological, psychological, and nutrition science with oral health to integrate effective prevention strategies into his dental practice. A passionate health educator, Dr. Lin engages in a wide variety of community and institutional programs to grow awareness of preventative lifestyles. You guys, Dr. Stephen Lin is going to dive into his book, The Dental Diet, How to Optimize Our Oral Health Through Diet and Lifestyle, Mouth Breathing, Vitamin D, Sun Exposure. It's chock full of good stuff when it comes to your oral health. So tune in and learn how to ensure you are the healthiest you can be. All right, Dr. Stephen Lin, I'm so excited to have you on today's podcast. I've been such a fan from afar. I haven't seen a dentist take the Instagram platform as seriously as you do when it comes to sharing science and getting people excited about fixing their oral health by working on their entire body, their nutrient status, getting outside. I mean, the stuff you're sharing is so needed. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I know that's a full-time job on top of being a holistic dentist, so I appreciate it.
It's so nice to meet you, Kelly. Yeah, it's been such a great journey meeting and connecting with professionals like yourself who kind of get how important the baseline food and nutrition principles are for people's health. But then there's so many secrets and so many kind of stuck points people get with their oral health. So that's been the motivation point to really get the information out there, to show people they can understand their health better through their teeth.
Definitely. Well, can we talk about how this transition happened for you personally to become a holistic or a functional dentist, what you learned in school and kind of how you're practicing today and how that might look different?
Yeah, I'm sitting in my practice today. So you might hear a little bit of that patients walking in and out of the background. It's very busy, but it wasn't always like that. So just to go back, I was biomedical science trained before dental school. So I had a background in kind of base level physiology. So I looked at things in a little bit more detail just through instinct. But when I got out into practicing dentistry, I was a little bit aligned to whole body thinking. And I thought that the dentistry and my path and career would lead me into practicing that. But I was a bit disillusioned when I got into the reality of dental practice, which is a lot of drill and fill. It's a lot of fixing problems. And then eventually you kind of realize like, hey, I'm not really understanding what's going on here. I'm just fixing problems. And dentistry is a very highly trained skill for that. It's very particular in the materials and you're working in saliva and a very challenging environment in putting things into bites. So that's all like an engineering and a physical construct. But then understanding the baseline, I found that was a little bit wanting. And so I was trying to go and understand why, for instance, some kids would get decay and in the same family and others wouldn't, and why some kids would need braces, why others wouldn't. All these things were popping up in my patients, and I just didn't have the answers when I looked at the traditional textbooks. So it led me to kind of actually take some time away from my practice. And I was traveling through Europe and I stumbled upon a book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by a doctor called Weston A. Price, which was written in the 20s and 30s. And it showed me kind of a picture of this idea that, hey, human teeth haven't always been as decayed and crooked as what we're seeing today. And in my mind, I had grad school qualifications and it was showing me things that I hadn't really thought about or seen. So at that point, I kind of looked at it and I thought, oh, this is probably being discounted. So I'm just going to put it in my bag and forget about it. But it was like the book kept calling me. And eventually I went back to it and I realized that, hey, this guy was onto something that I didn't understand with my modern training. And so that kind of led me into the pathways to understanding. So, well, have we ever had any scientific verification to why tooth decay changes in one generation when we look at ancestral versus traditional processed diets? And why does crooked teeth when we start to eat the modern diet? That's a big question that the dental industry was just completely ignoring. And then that took me into the rabbit hole and I began to see that there was a whole body of scientific literature understanding craniofacial growth, nutrition and hormones and nutrients and all of these things, how they work together to one, form the dental arch, which is why we see straight teeth in kids, but then also to create immune systems in the teeth as well to make them immune to dental decay, which is why our ancestors didn't have holes or cavities and why they didn't need dentists. And so that was kind of the lead in to finding that and writing my book, The Dental Diet, which was published in 2018. And that's really been the baseline for my practice now, where we were looking at merging functional medicine with dentistry. And it works really well, actually, when you start to see the mouth as a diagnostic organ and, you know, a mirror for the whole body. And you don't ignore it just as being something that you get a broken tooth with, but you actually look at it first as a diagnostic tool and then use it to correct the systemic issues as well. And I think medicine will hopefully move in this direction where we can actually look at the body together with oral systemic functional medicine instead of just healing things in silos.
Oh, so many key terms that you just said in that one paragraph that we need to talk about: dental arch, craniofacial growth, hormones, immune systems in our teeth. The fact that, shout out to Weston A. Price, because I feel like I've had so many physicians on this show where he has opened their minds to why they wanted to become a doctor or a dentist in the first place. Like, there's so much to learn, and I know we only have a certain amount of time, so I want to get into it. You mentioned that there are some times in families where you'll see kids with cavities and kids without, kids who need braces and kids who don't. What is the science that you're starting to see and the research that you're starting to see come out? And what do you think is causing these cavities and these kind of, like, I don't want to say broken facial systems, but like the more narrow jaw or the chin that's retracted almost like that, not that like broad, strong jaw that you're looking for?
Yeah. And that's totally what Price publishing his book, he showed these big, wide human faces that when I first saw them, I realized that I haven't seen these in my practice. You know, these don't happen anymore. And you say broken face, but, you know, really this is actually pretty accurate. You know, our kids' jaws aren't developing and they are experiencing the very severe consequences of having a jaw that restricts an airway and having teeth that literally crumble when they pop out of their little gums. And so what I'm seeing is that what's really important, and Price observed this as well, is that in traditional societies, they made sure that couples that were to conceive in the next 6 to 12 months, they would eat a nutrient-dense diet. And so what this means is that from preconception through pregnancy to birthing, all of this is affecting how a child is utilizing nutrients and mineralizing its bony structure. So teeth is part of the vitamin D system where the skeletal system absorbs calcium, but then it's distributed with its support nutrients, vitamin A, D, K2, which Price observed. He said these people, their diets rich in vitamin A and D and activator X. He didn't know what activator X was. It took 70 years for them to realize that there was a second vitamin K. And this is vitamin K2, which has multiple types, but it's a synergistic factor to vitamin D. So these kids have all of these different inputs, you know, when they're growing and developing from right from birth, breastfeeding. We know now that vitamin D deficiency travels from a mother's breast milk to a child. And we know that at least 70%, I would argue far higher than that, of people are now deficient in vitamin D. And this is exactly what Price is talking about. We see vitamin D deficiency underlying every chronic disease, including the skeletal system, where in its most severe form, kids develop rickets. So where, and this is happening today, their femur bones are not developing under the weight of their body because their skeletal system is not calcified enough. Same problem in the mouth. It's a little bit different the way it works in the mouth, but the mouth is a diagnostic tool because it works with the gut microbiome, which is basically developing during a child's growth periods. And so when we have imbalances with the oral microbiome and we have nutrient deficiencies, this is how we start to get this problem of decay. And it's not just a factor of putting sugars on the surface of the teeth. It's deficiencies in the mouth. It's how we are balancing with the immune system and the history of how a child develops right through preconception and going forward. It's all about food. It's all about how we breathe and sleep, stress and movement. It's how our bodies are designed to be. And we shouldn't have this decay and crooked teeth like we do.
Wow. So if someone's just getting started and they're thinking about having children, it's going to be their child. So their diet is going to impact it. How would you recommend? I mean, obviously, you're talking about fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. What do you mean by a nutrient-dense diet? And how is that supporting the oral microbiome and the future of the child's dental health?
Yeah, so I mean, growing a child's a very energy-dependent process. And so I think we really need to see it like this. We need to grow the baseline skeletal systems, all the organs and the neurological system, which develops so quickly in children. It's so energy-dependent. So what I think parents can be thinking about is that you need a lot of that stored high energy nutrients, which is vitamin D. The most concentrated source of energy we have comes from sunlight, which is stored through our skin through cholesterol and the accumulation of saturated fats through the body, and it builds up in the liver. So the body will basically build all this up. So we really need to be eating nutrients which come from organs and heavy animal fats because they have the cholesterol. They have all of the full spectrum of vitamin A, D, and K2, which you only get in the organs in its highest form. So we really need to be eating them at least 3 to 4 times a week with foods like bone broth, which has been based in every single human diet. Because one thing that I'm noticing a lot in women who have conceived 2 to 3 children is that their gums are running away. And this is because of lack of collagen. And so when we don't have enough of these broths that are the breaking down of the collagen materials, we don't have enough of these materials and it comes out literally out of our bodies. The amount of times I've seen women who have experienced their first to second hole in their teeth or a severe deterioration in their dental health because everything has gone to their child, it's because we don't see this as such an energy intensive process. And a lot of the postpartum work that we have to do now to regenerate that is about this nourishment. And so if we start early, I think we can really get on top of hopefully preventing it in our kids, but also too in ourselves so we can be healthier for our children as well.
Definitely. Well, it's interesting because the only nutrient recommendation here in the United States when a baby comes home from the hospital is vitamin D. Do you have an optimal dose that you think children, like infants, children, and adults should be on when it comes to supplementing outside of what they're eating?
I mean, that will depend a little bit. So, I mean, to start with, a mother should know their vitamin D levels and they should be at least 60 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. I feel that they should be within that range. And so if a mother who is just conceived or pregnant, they should be at that range. And once you start doing the testing, you'll find that no one is there, especially when they're carrying a baby, right? Like they just don't have these levels. So, I mean, look, just as anecdotal, I've had three children. We had three under three, so it was like intense. My wife was supplementing 20,000 IU of vitamin D a day alongside the support nutrients. So, and that was all through her breastfeeding. So she breastfed each child for 1 year to make sure that she had those adequate levels. And she was still on the lower end of that spectrum during that. A lot of the literature shows now that we've drastically underestimated what we're talking about in terms of dosages and blood levels and so forth. It's not perfect. We're measuring a vitamin D level in the blood that has many active forms. So there's other things to be measuring as well, the parathyroid and thyroid hormones and so forth. But as a baseline, I think pregnant women or even preconceiving 60 to 80 nanograms per milliliter is a great marker.
Wow. I mean, it's so amazing that your wife was supplementing with 20,000 IUs a day and was maybe at like a lower optimal level, because I just even look at having two children under 3 years old, back to back, pregnant, breastfeeding for 18 months, pregnant. Now I've been breastfeeding for 20 months. And I just finally did like the full panels with all my doctor, Nutravals, everything. And interestingly enough, I've had my first cavity since I was a kid. And it's in line with exactly what you're saying. And my vitamin D level was in the tank. You know, our family, like many other families, had COVID. We had it twice. So we've, you know, looking at having kids back to back and thinking, oh, I live in California. I'm in the sun so much. We're hiking. We're at the beach. I do organ meats from Force of Nature here in the United States, which is like a pasture-raised ground beef that cuts in organ meats as a ground. So for making burgers or tacos, we're using that. We're using pasture-raised eggs. Like my family's eating foods that contain fat-soluble vitamins all the time. We eat animal protein multiple times a day. That's what my boys are growing up on. But to see those numbers, I was like, what? Like, how is that even possible? They suck all the nutrients out of you. And there's something to be said about like repleting those. I feel safe now supplementing at a higher level to get myself back where I need to be. But it's just interesting how deficient we can become, even when we think we're eating the most nutrient-dense diet when we're going through that period in our life.
There's a really interesting study that happened at the same time as when Weston A. Price was publishing his work called Pottinger's Cats. And what they did was that they used generations of different diets and its effect on the cat's health. And what happened was that once you took a feline off their traditional carnivore diet, because they eat meat, so they start to go into processed dairy and processed foods, they have this four-generation decline into basically extinction. And then what he did was that at generation three, before they started to kind of actually not function anymore, he began to put them back on their diet. But it takes them four generations to heal three generations of harm. So that epigenetic harm, basically, or deficiency. So basically, we run our levels low, and then everything is basically just surviving. And then so to replete, it seems like we need four generations. Although with modern medicine, I think we can be a bit quicker on this, but it's a great example that like we're trying to solve a generational issue here. And we have to thank our parents and our grandparents for their transition onto this as well. But this is what I'm seeing in patients. Such a common story. Even the families who are aware, who are eating nutrient-dense diets, their kids are showing up with malformed enamel, with these stained and still having these little jaws. And we're just having to sit down and be calm about it because they're so defeated by it. But we're saying, well, this is a generational problem. We are on top of it now. And everything we're doing now will help the child's adult teeth to form. But there are other issues that we have to kind of approach in terms of your child's children and then your great-grandchildren. I think that's where we're going to solve this.
Definitely.
Now, more than ever, it's really important that we're voting with our pocketbook. I think we can look at every decision we make as a way to support brands that are focused on our planet's health and sustainability And in the last year and a half, I've really tried to clean out my closet. And that's when I found Vuori. So Vuori is an athleisure brand. And if you've been at school drop-off, I think one out of every four moms are wearing their performance joggers because they're really, really comfortable and they come in amazing colors. But the reason why I love Vuori so much is because they're committed to offsetting 100% of their carbon footprint, and they're focused on sustainable materials. So not only are they really high quality, beautiful, and super comfortable, but they're really focused on a healthy planet. So if you are looking for a way to gift your family members something that they're going to love, but also support brands that are focused on sustainability, Vuori should be a brand that's on your radar. And if you haven't given their clothing a chance, I recommend their performance jogger and their daily legging. And if you have a hubby, their men's core short is awesome. But I also want to support you to do that. So you're going to receive 20% off your first order and free shipping for orders over $75, and you get free returns. So all you need to do is go to Vuori.com/Kelly, and you can see all of the amazing options they have. That's Vuori.com/Kelly, and Vuori is spelled V-U-O-R-I and .com/Kelly. And the deal you're getting is 20% off your first order and free shipping for orders over $75. And they have a free returns policy. So you can't lose by giving them a try and just feeling how soft and luxurious these sustainable clothing options are for your athleisure wear.
So you have a child, let's say, for example, Sebastian, my four-year-old, almost four-year-old, rolls into your office. And you're like, wow, okay, well, I see Kelly's meals online. We know what she's eating. She tells me what she's feeding her family, but I'll give you a little insight. He was a pacifier sucker. I didn't know about the jaw thing then, but he did breastfeed for 18 months. And let's say he has some, you said enamel issues. Like, what kind of enamel issues are you looking for? What do you like physically as a parent, what can we look for on our child's teeth? And what would you advise them to start doing outside of getting more fat soluble vitamins?
Yeah. So discoloration of the enamel. So you can have like a brown discoloration, which can be a malabsorption issue at a certain time in the child's life. So it can be like like if they had a temperature. So when we're looking at a kid's teeth, it can help us really to kind of pin back, say, hey, what happened during pregnancy? And was I sick? And was my partner sick? Like, what happened? Was there a difficult third trimester? How was the birthing? How was that first, the fourth trimester now where we're going through the transition as we're feeding and everything? It kind of tells us sometimes when we have enamel formation issues, so there's like a brown spotting or there's kind of black like rings around the gum lines of the teeth, darkening. Enamel, it doesn't look right. Now, parents will see it. They'll know, you know, when it's not that kind of white color. Or sometimes it's like a mottled white, which can be a fluorosis, but also can be malabsorption elsewhere as well. Those things are telling us, say, hey, something happened while the child, you know, was in utero that affected the development of these teeth. Because all those teeth are developing in the child's gums when they're in utero, right? So we're kind of going back and we're thinking like, you know, were there time, stress is a huge one. Sleep, like how many women sleep well in third trimester now? Like not many. All of that is going to influence how the body manages the distribution of vitamin D and so forth. But the big one too is function. So even if the teeth are without decay, what we're seeing now is that the jaws are malformed quite quickly. And we have the early habits like pacifiers, which are great to stop a child from crying, right? But there's also too the effect. So if a child has a pacifier for too long, you start to get an open bite. So what happens is the two teeth, they won't meet like that. They'll actually meet and the child will bite and there'll be a gap at the front. It's one of the first signs that there's been something impeding the development of those teeth to come together. And then we start to get a bite issue. One big problem that most kids just don't have now is that all kids should have spacing between their teeth. And Sebastian has all his 20 kids' teeth now. They should actually all be spaced. My children don't have these either. My 2.5-year-old has some spacing. Older one has his front teeth a bit constricted as well. But when a child doesn't have spacing in their kids' teeth, it's a sign that their jaws aren't quite big enough for what's going to be very big adult teeth coming in soon. Sebastian's roughly 2 years off. Yeah, it's a huge growth. So between 5 and 7 is where we start to get these front teeth coming out. And you see these huge adult teeth coming in. And before, you've got these nice, neat kind of line of kids' teeth. They're really cute. They sit together. They have nice smiles. But they're not big enough. And like, this is what Price is talking about. It's like, hey, our jaws used to be a lot bigger. What we can start to do is we can start to grow and expand the jaw. And so the big things that impact this is nasal breathing at night. So children that breathe through the mouth, it actually stunts the growth of the maxilla, the upper jaw. And so what happens is you get these palate issues, even in the breastfed kids, because what happens is that breastfeeding should be a posterior motion of the tongue to the back of the throat as the child extracts milk from the nipple. But a lot of kids now, they don't have the jaw structure even when they're born. So what happens is they're compensating for their little jaw. So they have these shallow latches. And what this does is even when they're breastfed, the palate doesn't get the widening that it needs to. So we have these little palates in kids that are even breastfed, and in bottle-fed kids, it can be a little bit more severe. So that's the roof of the mouth. So if you get your child to open and you look at the roof of their mouth, is it a nice wide, flat U shape, or is it more of a deeper V? A deeper V means this bone is narrow. And what we'll see is we'll see the point that the front teeth are pointed together, because there's not enough space there. It should be wide and spaced and U-shaped. And so that's the first sign that the jaws aren't developing as quickly as they need to. And this is every kid now, literally every kid. And so what that does is it challenges their airway, because the maxilla, the upper jaw, is also the floor of the nasal sinus. So what happens is that they have a smaller constricted nasal sinus, and it's very difficult for them to breathe when they go to sleep, because all the muscles here relax when you go to sleep. Sometimes the mouth will open, the tongue will be down, and then they're breathing through the mouth through the night, the most critical growth period, because that's when all the signaling for the jaw is to grow. And so they get a little mouth breathing habit. You can have a cold and a child will start mouth breathing. And then if you don't consciously get them to start to breathe through the nose again, that stays. The other factor is tongue posture. So the tongue should be sealed up to the roof of the mouth. And what this does is it molds that palate. So a child's palate is very moldable, especially in the first 2 years of life. That's why breastfeeding is so effective, when you get this upward and backward motion of the tongue. But when the child doesn't have that posture, which is like a ceiling to the roof of the mouth, what happens is that they start to get the low tongue posture, and they could get this open mouth, open lip posture when they're watching television, when they're not basically speaking or eating. And that's what stunts the growth of the jaw as well. You start to get these jaws that sit back because the tongue doesn't pull the jaw forward to have this profile, and it doesn't grow in the dimensions that it needs to. So all of these signs, the open bite, a cross bite where the upper teeth are sitting inside, that's a big sign that the kid's pediatric jaw is underdeveloped. Open bites, the lips that stay open, the mouth breathing, the low tongue posture, congestion, snoring at night, which is a huge one, teeth grinding. All of these things are telling us that the child's airway isn't functioning right, and that's because of the growth of the jaw.
Ooh. So as a parent, you start to hear your kid grinding a little bit or notice a snore. You're worried about mouth breathing. Are we taping our kids' mouths yet? what are we doing to fix it?
Okay, Sebastian's four, right? So my son's four too. So at these ages, this is where modern medical intervention is going to be gold, right? So we can actually intervene in the growth of the jaw. So we can put expanders in to grow the jaw. Something called myofunctional orthodontics is about correcting the function of the child. So breathing through the nose, wearing a guard, and sealing the tongue to the roof of the mouth. This will change the jaw on its own. But it's difficult in a four-year-old because they have to comply, they have to wear the guards, they have to do the exercises. So we do these programs normally at 6 to 7. But yeah, in a four-year-old, you can actually expand the jaw. So if I saw a child with a very narrow palate who was struggling to breathe, he's seen an ENT surgeon. So you do need to get the adenoids and tonsils checked, because a lot of kids have a lot of tissues at the back of the airways that are blocking these things. So getting a check on that is important, especially in the younger ages, 2 to 4, very important. But if all of that is ticked off, then at 3 to 5, we can start growing these jaws. And this is what we're doing in our practice. The kids are walking up and down there now because every single child has these little jaws that are restricting their airways. And so when they're snoring or teeth grinding, so teeth grinding is a signal from the brain to pull the jaw forward to open the airway. So it's usually a sign that the tongue is falling back in the throat during sleep, and the child is activating that to open the airway. And what it does, it keeps them in this very kind of fight or flight activated version of sleep. So they never get into the deeper levels. They sometimes wet the bed more. Sometimes they have night terrors. Sometimes they'll do the kind of sleepwalking, or they just don't sleep. How many parents now are saying their kids don't sleep at 4 and 5 and 6? They just don't, because their airway isn't supported during sleep and they're not taught and they're not supported with how we support their immune system to unclog their nasal sinus and so forth. And for them, sleeping is scary and they just don't. The amount of parents I see now that have kids and they've just no one has slept in the house for 4 to 5 years, it really boggles the mind. And it's all connected to how we breathe and how the dental arch is developing.
Oh my goodness. If you just saved the day and you're going to figure out how to get my family sleeping all night, every day, not waking up at 5:15, I'm going to have you back for sure. But let me just make sure that I have this right. So if the child is under 6 years old and they're at an age between 2 and 4, there's a way that we can actually expand their jaw physically with expanders. And then if they're 6 to 7 years old, there's you called it a myofunctional.
Myofunctional orthodontics. So the myofunctional orthodontics is orthodontics that is directed at growing the jaw, not just correcting the teeth. So traditional orthodontics is moving the teeth into alignment, but it's not addressing the underlying issues, which is the breathing, the tongue posture, the head posture, all of the growth and development factors. So in myofunctional orthodontics, what we're doing is we're trying to correct the jaw before it becomes a problem. So at 6 to 7, so when a child starts to lose their teeth at 5, the lower teeth, lower incisors fall out. At 7 to 8, the upper incisors to fall out, and then they start to have the adult teeth come in. Between those times, between 6 to 12, that's when all the adult teeth come in. This is the biggest growth period of a child's life. And this is where we can intervene. It's like magic. Like the child's jaw will grow quickly when we correct the habit and functions, but when we also give it orthopedic guidance, which is what a myofunctional guided orthodontic program will do. So if a listener is looking for how to get their child one assessed to see what the problem is, because every child's different. It's a spectrum of all these issues. And some kids have the narrow palate, or some kids have the low tongue. Some kids have the tongue tie, which does keep their tongue quite low as well. And then some kids have the habits like the thumb sucking or the pacifier, they've had the open bite. There's different ways to do it. But the philosophy is that, hey, we can intervene in this and we can grow the jaw. So it's about finding a practitioner that has that philosophy, understands its connection to sleep and breathing and the risks of sleep apnea and teeth grinding and so forth, and that can give a program. You know, it might be sometimes it is to wait and watch for a bit, but sometimes we can put an expander in to grow a child's jaw to help that process, because we do these programs in kids for at least 2 years and they're growing the whole time, and a lot of time we need more. So it's like there's a lot to be done in children that are, you know, have a lot to do to get their adult teeth in with enough space.
Oh. It's such a relief to hear. My second child, we were like not about to give him the pacifier because Sebastian was so obsessed with it. And I think you just learn along the way. So come whenever we decide to have a third, we're like, hey, you're going to sleep without a pacifier. I'm going to be checking for mouth breathing and teeth grinding and all these things. But it's really nice to have options and to be proactive about something that, you know, you can really impact. I mean, just sleep quality and not being a mouth breather and all the things that come with proper alignment of your jaw. So can we talk about some things that are traditional dentistry and how you feel about those, like fillings, root canals, sealants, people who have deep grooves in their teeth and they're told to cover them? How are these things impacting or affecting our oral microbiome, and how do you personally feel about them?
So the term functional dentistry, in the way I practice it, looks at things in a functional sense. So can we do something to, one, achieve a physiological goal, and does it do harm to the system? So if anything that does harm, then we should not be doing it. And so that's where there are materials such as metals, for instance, that can cause a problem. The old mercury amalgams, these things should not be put in the mouth, and sometimes they should be replaced safely. And also you can have metal-based crowns and so forth that can have issues as well. We're learning that there's electromagnetic radiations and problems when we have metals in the mouth and so forth, because it's saliva. It's like a battery in there. You've got saliva, which is like, and if you have two different materials, it will form a current in your mouth. And so these things, so we need to be biocompatible with our materials. But so things like deep grooves, when a person understands how diet affects their decay risk, if they eat, you know, an animal-based diet with organs and broth and so forth, and they eat relatively lower processed foods and refined carbohydrates, I'm not worried about bruising these people, because I know that their body is going to formulate an immune response because they're eating the right things. In kids, that's a bit different, you know, because a lot of kids, a lot of families struggle with this, right? It's very hard to get kids to eat animal-based diets. And, you know, we do, but it is difficult. So everyone's talking about these animal-based and carnivore diets. Getting kids to eat like that is hard, right? Now, my kids don't have fruit. They don't have any kind of grains or anything, but we're getting to the point now where it's very difficult to find meal ideas, right? They're getting sick of their eggs in the morning and we've got two girls, so they get pickier as they get older. So for families, it's a challenge. So if there are risks, if there are kind of dietary habits there that we think maybe there could be a risk of decay there, sometimes sealing a deep fissure is a good idea because we know that we're not going to get the fermentable carbohydrates down into that fissure. So we really have to kind of approach it in a case-by-case basis. For root canals, that's where a nerve has been infected. And so the inside of the tooth is infected. Now, there's kind of some talk out there that all root canals are bad. And it is an unideal solution to an unideal situation. So you can get infections with root canals, which is an attempt to basically seal off the inside of the tooth, take out all the infected material and keep it. Now, I'm not completely against root canals because they do serve a functional purpose. A person with a well-functioning immune system will actually tolerate a root canal quite well. I've seen it a lot of times. They'll have a root canal there without any kind of infection. Some people have this very chronic infection happening with the material that goes in and they have like an allergic reaction that becomes a deep abscess in the tooth. And you can pick these up on the 3D head scans. That's where root canals can be problematic. And it's case by case again. But the big thing I've found is that if we go through the medical history, if you find things like thyroid issues and autoimmune problems, gut dysbiosis, sleep problems, these are the people that their immune systems aren't so capable to have a root-treated tooth. So it's not all black and white, in my opinion, whereas some people will kind of take all the root canals out. Teeth are still functional in the sense that, you know, they hold airway space. You have a tooth out, you have an implant. Implants don't last forever either, but they're a great modality to replace teeth. We just want to be considering all of that before we go and take a tooth out. And maybe we can get 5 years out of a root-treated tooth. And that's, if you're a 40-year-old and you keep a tooth for 5 years, you get an implant when you're 46, 47. That's a big difference as opposed to having an implant when you're 40 and you're having problems maybe at 50, 55. All of these things, I think, need to be taken into account.
Because no matter what, if someone has an infected root, we're either going for a root canal or you're having it pulled out and you're allowing for that bone to heal and you're putting an implant in, right? I mean, there's no case in which something like an infected root is healing on its own.
Yeah, you can manage the infection. Like, so people use kind of herbal approaches and so forth, and it will kind of keep it at bay. It's always there though. And it's like a time bomb basically. And you don't want to leave an infection in the bone, like, because you've got your biggest cranial nerve running down the jaw here, both to upper and lower teeth. Your body is heavily monitoring what's going on there. You have a lot of energy expended when you have these deep infections, even if they're not showing up significantly on a CBCT or a film. Yeah. So for most people, when you come to that decision, I would say, think about it in the way that, you know, are you the type of person that is going to tolerate it? Some people philosophically just aren't, they just don't meld with root canals. And they're the type, like, just don't have one then. Like, and that's a decision for the individual that makes a lot of sense, because if you have that in your head, it's going to bother you and you're not going to deal with it very well. But other people are fine with it. And in which case we keep the tooth and it's much better for their long-term structure of their jaw.
Wow. So interesting. So getting into your book, The Dental Diet, I mean, you've given us a little bit of highlight into fat-soluble vitamins. Can you talk a little bit about the links between other parts of the diet, how we should be eating, and how that supports your oral microbiome and its health?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big things about the modern diet that harm, especially the oral microbiome, the refined sugars, the refined grains, and the refined seed oils. And the seed oils are the big ones. They sneak into everything in the US. They're everywhere. But the problem with seed oils is that it interferes with the absorption of the fat-soluble vitamins. So when we have seed oils in packaged foods or even cooking with seed oils, these are the ones that interfere with how we absorb these all-important vitamin D molecules, because they're packaged within, you know, the blood cholesterols and so forth. So removing these, or being very careful about grains, refined carbohydrates, like even fruit, is something that I try to tell people to be careful of. One thing in particular with fruit is that in kids, the fructose is absorbed and it has to be processed in the liver. So I don't give my kids fruit for the reason that I don't want to burden their liver with the fructose. But the other thing too is that kids are very drawn to sweet tastes. And so when they don't get these kind of fatty stimulation of the tongue in earlier life, they seem to be always on this cycle of searching for these carbohydrate-based foods. again, very difficult. But fruits is something that I, you know, at least tell parents to be a little bit careful of, because I see so many kids now that eat healthy, you know, whole food diets. And then the last thing is they eat a heap of fruit and then we look in the mouth and there's just cavities. And so it's just something to be mindful of, that the total load of sugar, including natural sugars, will impact the oral microbiome, because you get those fast metabolizing bacteria that turn into acid, which is exactly what we're talking about with the classical theory of decay. Sugar goes to fermentation of acid with the bacteria, which breaks down the enamel. That still happens. It's just that when we consider all the other factors, so we're eating nutrient-dense, whole fat animal foods, broths. One of the best ways in the book I found that to sneak liver into a kid's diet is through a bolognese, mixed mince bolognese, right? So you chop it up and they hide it. I put cod liver oil into my kids' milk and they sometimes notice it, sometimes don't. I found a straw has been effective for that. Yeah, but in a modern diet, it's about calibrating what we see as being normal food. Your cereals just aren't a normal food for breakfast. They just aren't. And, you know, when you look at the ingredients, that makes a lot of sense. But actually removing ourselves off these is the challenging part.
Definitely.
Our next partner has a product I literally use every day. I started taking AG1 because finally, after 4 years of either being pregnant or breastfeeding, I decided to do a full NutriVal on my nutrient levels and found that I was low in plant antioxidants, which was a shock to me based on the way that I eat. But I realized I was giving so much of my nutrition away via breast milk. And after having two kids, running a business, and the stress that comes with that, I needed something that I could take every day consistently on top of my Fab Four smoothie, on top of making nutrient-dense meals for my kids. And that's why I started taking AG1. It's super easy. It's a multivitamin green powder. And all you have to do is take a scoop, put it in a glass of water. Sometimes I give it a little squeeze of lemon, mix it up, but it's lifestyle friendly. Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemical flavors or artificial anything. And it supports great quality sleep and recovery, mental clarity and alertness. And I love that it's third-party tested. I went so far as interviewing their medical officer and learning more about the product. And I am so relieved that this product is so highly tested, NSF certified, and they have over 7,000 five-star reviews. I know personally that it's delicious, but right now they're actually giving you a chance to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with this convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/bewell. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/bewell to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So go get it, snag the deal, and take care of your health.
So someone has a child, when should they start seeing a dentist? And when does a dentist start treating cavities in kids? And how early are you starting to see cavities in children?
Well, we see cavities, unfortunately, you know, sometimes not long after the teeth are erupted. And the tragic part of that is that, you know, the child sometimes has to go under general anesthetic to have the teeth treated. It's tragic. It really
is. That's so sad.
It is. It's really common too. It's so common. Because between the age of 2 to 5, it's very hard to treat a child in the chair. Some pediatric dentists will be able to do some, but when the tooth is infected or when the hole is too big, the child does have to go under general anesthetic. And so this is the unfortunate reality with teeth, is that they're a little bit unforgiving in the sense that we have to be kind of really mindful as to what's going into our children, because the impacts are real. But you know, at the same time, for parents that experience that, I always try to give a message of hope, is that a child's tooth, even if they have a hole or cavity, it does pass. So, you know, we do have adult teeth in their gums that will be changed by their dietary habits now. And so even though it seems like a bit of a defeat, it's just a message to kind of say, okay, so this is what we need to do and we'll fix it and we'll move on. And with the right kind of guidance, a child will have a perfect set of adult teeth, even if they have some holes in or problems with their childhood teeth. So one of the first checks that a child should have is not long after being born. That's for a tongue tie. So oral restrictions can impede breastfeeding. So that can be done in conjunction with a lactation consultant. how a child is latching, how they're feeding. A big thing is, you know, how they're actually extracting. Are they getting enough milk? One thing we've found, I've had a boy and two girls. The girls are a bit smaller. They just don't extract much milk at the start because they're littler, right? They become better feeders, but they're just little. Our third girl's really small, but they don't get as much milk. And you don't really realize when you're breastfeeding how much volume they're getting. So that early interface of making your own supply and can the child latch properly if they have a tongue tie or not can be very important in getting that nice and smooth, because it can be very bumpy for parents if that feeding period goes awry. From there, you know, like transferring from breastfeeding is important too, because that kind of plays into how the child sleeps. Night feeding and everything, a dental practitioner can help with this, because we can help sometimes get a child off a pacifier habit as well. So there are devices that are chewing devices or tongue clicking or exercises that can help. My functional therapists are oral muscular trainers that work with dentists to do this. So getting children to see these people early is important, because we can also help their function moving forward. And sometimes it's the speech therapist that sees a child for how they're making their first sounds at 2 to 3, which is really important, because their tongues making those noises can be impeded. And if we identify that early, you can actually correct it and it will help their development moving forward. So this kind of 0 to 5 age group is a really kind of new area of very small little interventions, but it can actually help a lot in their overall growth and development. And we can identify issues. So if we see a kid with a narrow palate, then we know that at some point we're going to need to do expansion. So when they're ready, we can plan and expand out that when they're 4 or 5 or so, so that we can start that growth period better. So I would be getting to a dentist that is attuned to this kind of information as early as possible.
Definitely. And then in regards to like kids getting sealants, would you ever seal a kid's tooth? Like you said, like those fissures, not just for adults, these are for kids too, or do they have problems?
So generally it's like a composite resin. I mean, I don't use fluoride, so some sealants will have fluoride in. I don't recommend that. But so a composite resin sealant is got some BPAs and so forth. I think in certain situations for a high-risk kid with deep fissures, that may be warranted, because you're going to stop that early decay. But that's only in high-risk situations. If the diet and the breathing and the sleep and everything is controlled, we should be able to control that. But fissures, sealants in some children will help prevent decay, because some kids will form new lesions and we don't, it's better to treat in that sense.
Definitely. Well, let's move over to what would be like more holistic or ancient practices. How do you feel about tongue scraping and oil pulling and all the things that kind of come with more of a holistic dental approach? Do you recommend these things?
Yeah, like I mean, tongue scraping, we know that there's a biofilm that builds up, especially the back of the tongue. So that's a great way to kind of just help that turn over. Some people get that kind of white appearance on the back of the tongue, which can be a digestive issue, but tongue scraping can really help that. And for people that are tongue scraping too, you don't always need a specialized scraper. You can use floss and just scrape it from the back. That's a really good way just to kind of quickly do some tongue cleaning too. Oil pulling is like kind of from the school of Ayurvedic medicine, and there's not a lot of evidence for it, but one thing I like about it is it's introducing a fat into the microbiome, the oral microbiome. And we know that the oral microbiome has disease from too much carbohydrate, and it changes the bacteria and the metabolites of these bacteria. And that's how you get disease. So introducing a fat means that the bacteria that thrive in a fatty environment, which is the ones we want, because remembering the vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. So all the bacteria, for instance, in the small intestine that help absorb all the fat-soluble vitamins, we need them in the mouth too. So I think there's an argument there for oil pulling, because it helps change that oral environment to a more fat-friendly, you know, microbiota population. And we don't know a lot about that yet either, but just from what we know about what sugars do, if you're introducing a fat there, to me, it makes sense in that you're going to be benefiting the oral microbiome.
Yeah, if you kind of extrapolate the gut microbiome research and how certain microbes feed off of certain things and ferment different kinds of resistant starches or carbohydrates or fat feeding or whatever, it's kind of interesting that, of course, it would make its way up to your mouth and be a different microbiome, but would probably work and act the same way. On that note, what are you excited about? What do you wish, if you could like wave a magic wand and have some answers to some dental questions, some oral microbiome questions, what would you like answered? And what do you think is coming down the pipe for if you could guess, for oral health?
That's a good question. So what I'd really like to see is oral systemic medicine becoming far more mainstream, where doctors and dentists work, you're not in separation. So people actually understand that when you have an oral issue, it is connected to the rest of the body. I think oral microbiome measurements are going to be exciting, because at the moment we're testing gut microbiome and fecal samples. Like, surely it's far more effective to be doing saliva samples and checking what's here. And there's a good amount of research that shows that what happens with certain disease present with periodontal disease and so forth, it reflects into the rest of the mouth. So can we get a really sharp diagnostic tool to present risk factors for pre-diabetes, for thyroid issues? I think all of those things are waiting there in the mouth. One really exciting thing is practitioners out there that are measuring energy systems, so meridians, with each of the teeth. And so in Chinese medicine, they say that each tooth connects to an organ. There's actually rationale for this, because they've done studies where they show that when you put a radioactive dye on teeth and you change the type of diet a rat eats, it will absorb that radioactive dye into different parts of the bloodstream. You'll detect it in the bloodstream. So teeth are absorbing nutrients, and they're also excreting nutrients as well. And so the body is literally balancing from what's happening in the mouth. You know, the tongue is a lymphatic drainage system, and it's all starting in the mouth. The mouth is far more diagnostic than what we give it credit for. So, for example, like if you look at the meridian system in Chinese medicine, it says that the wisdom teeth are connected to the heart, and a lot of people have had their wisdom teeth extracted, right? So what is the effect of this in terms of how it affects their heart meridians and so forth? And so aligning these with energetic medicine, I think, is going to be a really little bit down the pathway. We've got a few things to kind of fix before we get to those levels, but the technology is there. And once we get to the understanding that the oral systemic connection is real and powerful, I think it's going to change the medical model quite significantly, because it's going to be more effective, and people aren't just going to want to go to their doctor to get told they need a medication for a systemic condition that is a dietary, breathing, sleep, and a nutrient problem.
Right. It's interesting. I would love for dentists and doctors not to be in silos. I mean, that is the future. When you're working with a functional doctor, they are looking at your entire body and they're missing the mouth completely. So to pair you guys together would really truly be a dream team. Can you explain a little further about how your teeth are extracting things and absorbing things? Like, what are our teeth extracting, or what are they releasing?
Well, there's blood supplies in each tooth. And so what the study shows that you can detect these radioactive dyes, you can actually reverse the flow too. So there's little tubules inside the dentine, which are like absorbing. And so the teeth are literally absorbing what they need. And so, like, I'm kind of hypothesizing here, but if the certain teeth are connected to certain organs, which use certain nutrients, I think that certain teeth are absorbing certain nutrients. So each tooth is absorbing a different type of mineral or a different type of nutrient. I think that's what we're going to find. I don't have any evidence but we know that the teeth absorb into the bloodstream. We know this is happening. And in ancient medicines, and not just Chinese medicine, other medicine modalities too, they show that there are energy systems to the teeth. So for instance, like, I would assume that if the wisdom teeth are connected to the heart meridian, I would say they're probably absorb coenzyme Q10, because it's so rich in the muscle fibers of the heart, because it has to beat all the time. So do people that have their wisdom teeth out, do they struggle to absorb CoQ10? That's an interesting research question. I think those kind of things could be quite interesting in how we realize, because the mouth is definitely digesting from the get-go. There's endocrine signaling from the brain to the parotid gland. It's telling us to do all these different things. So there's a lot more going on than what we really even kind of know. The last thing too is that we even know that the bacteria in the mouth will travel up the cranial nerve to the brain. And there is a microbiome in the brain that we're now learning to see. So this oral microbiome is probably a functional communication between the mouth and the brain. So the mouth and the brain connection, I think, is going to be one of the biggest breakthroughs in our medical model, where we're actually looking at oral signs of disease going straight to neural problems. And we've just, in the last week or so, we've showed that antidepressants, where they're using the serotonin blockers in the stomach, that mechanism doesn't work, which we've known for a long time, but it was published. But also too, Alzheimer's and the dental plaque on the teeth is also too incorrect. And all the models of Alzheimer's disease, which is sugar dysregulations, so diabetic brain, vitamin D deficiency, sleep disorders, and metal toxicities, all start in the mouth. So if you unpin it all, it becomes very simple.
Yeah, you're like, hey, if you want to know what your future is, just go to your dentist and he'll be able to diagnose your future Alzheimer's risk, your future heart disease risk, your future diabetes diagnosis. Like, it's amazing. I'm so thankful that everything that's come out on the SSRIs and on Alzheimer's, because it's, look at the money that's being pumped into these drugs and this research that needs to be looking at microbiomes, that needs to be looking at inflammation as like the foundation of disease. And it all goes back to diet, which is crazy.
It really does. And like, it really instills a sense of hopelessness when you're kind of given a pill and say that this is what you have to do. When we start to kind of see that, hey, there's actually a mechanism we can understand here. Hey, you're not sleeping very well. You're probably a bit deficient in this nutrient. This will help as well. Like, it's there. We've just kind of got to jump those kind of mental barriers to understand that, hey, like, we're not kind of connected to, we don't need those pills. Like, we can use them, but, you know, if we understand the body as a whole, we can do much more effective things as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing this news online, for working with your clients, for inspiring. It's a good time to be a dentist. For inspiring people that maybe even change career paths, because I mean, this is cutting edge stuff. And I think really exciting to me. I've always loved functional medicine and lots of diagnostic testing and understanding the gut microbiome. And recently in the last like 2 years, been really excited about everything that's coming out in your space. So thank you for spending the time to be on the show. Thank you for writing your book, The Dental Diet. I'm so excited. I'll put it in the show notes so people can get their hands on it, figure out how they're going to get some organ meat into their diet and get those seed oils out.
Totally. Yeah. And thank you, Kelly, for all the work that you do. Like, the food and you know, overall health message is really important. Hopefully we will inspire some people to go into the dental field to be the enactors of this change, because it is very exciting. And I think the one big thing with functional medicine, the downfall has been that it has no understanding of oral medicine at all. And they've still had that disconnection. So it's been a stuck point. So I think functional medicine and dentistry can actually move forward quite quickly if we kind of just join those bridges.
Definitely. I'm here to help you build them. So let's make that happen. Where can people follow along? Where can they learn from you? And where can they snag your book?
Yeah, so they can find my website, drstevenlin.com, drstevenlin.com. And I'm on socials at Dr. Stephen Lin, no space. And my book, The Dental Diet, is available on Amazon if they want to read about the 40-day meal plan and all the kind of background into Weston A. Price and the mechanisms of oral disease as well.
Such good stuff. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Lin. It was such a pleasure. And I'll let you get to your work day, since it's morning there and you're just starting and I'm finishing up.
Have a great evening, Kelly. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope to do this again soon.
We definitely will.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.